morning is Reed v. Kohl's Department Stores. Ms. Meadows.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Tara Meadows, and I represent the appellant Lenora Reed in this case. Ms. Reed contends that in granting summary judgment on this premises liability case, the district court improperly resolved factual questions as to whether Kohl's had constructive notice of the spill that caused her fall and whether the spill was an open and obvious condition.
Before you get to that, what injury did she suffer as a result of the slip and fall? And what evidence is in the record to show what the costs of her injuries were that get you across the jurisdictional threshold?
Ms. Reed suffered back injuries. It was a soft tissue injury, and she did have some extensive therapy and medical treatment for her back injuries, and her medical specials were close to $30,000. There's no evidence in the record.
How much?
And what the medical?
$30,000.
And what's the balance then to get you up to the jurisdictional?
The balance of that would have been her claims for pain and suffering and loss of a normal life. She did have a lot of back pain, and she testified about that in her deposition. And
what about employment, missing work? Any? Because I was having trouble trying to. I know there was like the general allegation, and I know there was almost a concession that it was $75,000, but I wanted to know specifically because I didn't see that in the record.
There were no lost wages or lost time from work that we were claiming, but based on the total medical bills and what we would have asked before a jury, we would have asked for at least $75,000.
Because what was there a permanent injury then?
She does still have some lingering back pain. She's not receiving treatment for it, but it has something that has been ongoing for her.
So what about her normal functioning on a regular basis?
She's doing pretty well on a regular basis.
So you said that the actual medical expenses are about half of that $75,000?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So my question for you about the summary judgment is this. When any defendant, moves for a summary judgment, it's the responsibility of the party opposing that judgment, here you, the plaintiff, since you're going to have the burden of proof on this kind of claim, to point to enough that would allow a trier of fact to find in your favor on a non-speculative basis. And I'm concerned that although Ms. Reed thinks that this blob of pink milkshake, must have been there for a while, that it's so speculative that I'm not sure that you've shown enough to get over that hurdle.
Well, in addition to Ms. Reed's detailed descriptions about what the spill looked like, there were photographs of the spill that were taken immediately after the accident.
But I don't know anything in this record about how quickly, first of all, I don't know who made the milkshake. Is it a McDonald's milkshake? Is it Arby's? What ingredients are in it? I don't know how quickly they melt. Maybe some of them are so artificial they stay in a blob for hours, and some of them, are quick melters. I really don't know. And I'm not sure without some handle on how these things behave as a physical matter, I can look at a photograph of a chunk of pink milkshake and know what's happening.
That's a good point, but that's really a question for a fact finder to determine.
Well, but I'm saying it is and it isn't. You need to come forward with, here's going to be my milkshake melting expert, or, here's a reconstruction. There's something that would allow a jury to find, to draw an inference from what the milkshake looked like, that it must have been there long enough to give Kohl's constructive notice. That would be your burden at a trial.
Yes, and we're arguing that based on what that spill looks like in the photographs,
right,
a fact finder, a reasonable person, could look at that and say, looks like it's been there a long time.
That's your presentation in opposing the summary judgment motion?
That, as well as Ms. Reed's testimony that it looked to her as though the spill had been there for a while on the floor.
Well, isn't it possible that the milkshake melted in the cup of the person that was holding it rather than melting on the ground? I mean, you don't have any evidence that the milkshake melted on the ground, right?
That's possible, but again, I would respectfully submit that that's something for a fact finder to
determine.
Right,
but then if you had an expert witness that would testify about how fast it would melt, that would be helpful. And we did go on Google to look at this shopping mall, and there at least, and I know this isn't part of the record, but any place where the food is way at the other end of the mall, not close to where this Kohl's is. And so, I mean, that I have the same concern that Judge Wood does. How do we know how, I mean, apart from the melting of the milkshake in the photo, how, you know, you don't have any evidence as to how long a period it was there, so they could have been put on notice of it.
Well, that gets a little bit into the 10 minutes, so whether that is sufficient time for constructive notice. And there was
even if that, well, we understand that this court in Peterson anyway said there's nothing magic about 10, but I guess I'm at a prior point, which is what other than speculation is there to give us a clue as to whether it was 2 minutes, 10, 25? You know, maybe for all I know, I think you're right, maybe Ms. Rizzo wasn't paying attention when she went around. There are all kinds of possibilities there, but I just don't know how, without just a wild guess, a jury would know this.
Again, it's the photographs and what the spill looks like is something for a fact finder to look at and determine for themselves. Are we able to determine that this was there long enough? They might not, but that's really a question for a jury or a fact finder. You know, they might agree with...
I have to say, I mean, not that I'm on the jury, but if you just put a photograph of a spilled milkshake in front of me and you said, how long has it been there? I mean, I don't know that I could do more than take a stab in the dark at it.
I think a reasonable person could look at the spill and say, looks to me that like that's been there for a long time.
And what is a long time? I mean, what's the minimal amount of time it would need to be on the ground and be melting before we could show this constructive discharge? That's why it raises this question about an expert witness or something, or some circumstantial evidence to show. I mean, I just think you have a problem.
No one was able to say where the milkshake came from or the brand that
was
printed
on the cup. It could have been in the cup before, and it could have melted in the cup and just spilled. Somebody could have dropped it or something right before she got there. Could have melted in the cup. So when it spills out, it's already half melted. Your theory is that the fact that it's melted so much means that it had to probably be more than 10 minutes, and therefore they should have noticed it when they're parading around doing their check. Isn't that your theory? But we don't know what, I mean, we just don't know how long it was in the cup, you know, and if the jury got it, they would be totally speculating because we don't know who dropped it. It's just problematic. I understand you want us to connect the dots, but I don't know if we have enough dots to connect to get the picture.
Again, I think there is evidence to submit to a trier of fact here, and they might agree the same kind of arguments that are being heard here. But they might not, based on the evidence, the testimony, and the photographs. Going to the open and obvious, I see I'm entering my rebuttal time.
Well, you can use it any way you want. You can use it now.
Real briefly, this is a retail store. We've all probably been in Kohl's or a similar store. There's racks of clothing everywhere. And even if this were an open and obvious condition, the plaintiff testified that it was a rack of pajama pants that had caught her eye, and she was heading over to look at those when the fall happened. So there's a question of fact here as to whether she was distracted, taking all the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, which is the standard on summary judgment.
Okay.
There's no further questions. I'll yield the floor.
All right. You can save the rest of your time, and we'll hear from Mr. Hart.
Thank you. May it please the court, opposing counsel. I think this underscores the power of Google as a very valuable research tool, and I hesitate to even make any remarks because I certainly couldn't do it as eloquently as the court has done in identifying the deficiencies in plaintiff's case. I will say that constructive notice, a threshold issue in a premises liability case of this type does not require the store owner to be omniscient or clairvoyant. Plaintiff is suggesting exactly that. And at the end of the day, we believe Judge Zagel got it right. He examined the appropriate and relevant cases.
Your phone. It must be. Turn it off.
He examined this court's opinion in Peterson. He examined the controlling case law in Hisrael versus Sears. And I think he very well articulated exact deficiencies in this case. It is incumbent upon the plaintiff to come forward with some evidence of constructive notice. There is absolutely no evidence in this case, and the jury would be left to rank speculation for them to establish constructive notice. I will say that I've seen the pictures of the spill. And
they're in the record, right? They were attached to
the record.
Incident report. Yeah.
And I encourage you to look at the pictures of this spill. They do not speak whatsoever to constructive notice. As a matter of fact, all inferences are against any type of notice.
How do you distinguish Peterson?
Okay.
Is this court just off on the wrong track in Peterson, or are there serious distinctions?
The present case is distinguishable heavily from Peterson. And I will say that Peterson did recognize that Hressel versus Sears was an appropriate ruling. And they, in fact, took lengths to, and Judge Bauer certainly was on that panel, in the Peterson panel, took lengths to distinguish it from Hressel. And the same distinctions exist in this case, certainly. But I'll draw a couple points to your honors. One is that Peterson involved a condition that was that came about by items that were being sold by the defendant at the time. It was a woman's shaving lotion that had been obviously jostled from the shelves and found itself on the floor. It's not the case in our scenario. This was that someone, we don't sell pink milkshakes, we don't sell food, all right? Kohl's is primarily a clothing store.
Kohl's does sell spillable things. You sell perfumes and, you know, fragrances.
It certainly doesn't. This doesn't happen to be in the department in which those items are sold, but certainly there are things that can be spilled. This was a clothing department, the men's clothing department, where certainly you wouldn't expect anything to be spilled. But regardless, it doesn't sell pink milkshakes, so there's no question of fact as to whether this item was purchased.
I thought men's pajamas and pink Baldens went together.
I don't wear pajamas.
Some linkage.
You're telling us more than we need to know.
Correct. I like PJs. My children wear pajamas.
You don't wear them yourself, huh?
But I don't. You can't. I don't.
Oh dear, dear.
But pajamas don't spill, nor do sweaters spill, and to suggest that this was either. There's a couple primary issues that Peterson addressed that are absent from this case. Number one, that it was a very busy time in the store, and there was a high traffic area and a high traffic time. The exact opposite evidence exists in this case. As a matter of fact, Rizzo, who was the operations manager at the time and on duty, said that the store was dead, that there was nearly no one in the store. And so those particular heightened responsibilities that you would expect to be associated with a very busy store certainly don't exist, at least within the context of that discussed in the Peterson case.
Well, let me ask you about the milkshake spill happened at the edge of the aisle. And Ms. Reed said that the rack of clothing obstructed her view. How can we find that the spill was open and obvious? I mean, that was the point that she made. Why don't you address that?
I will, Your Honor, and thank you. The fact is that there is no testimony whatsoever that Ms. Reed could not have seen this open and obvious condition on the floors.
Doesn't that depend on how you read her testimony, though? Because, you know, frankly, this is the Christmas season. She's talking about, you know, there are Christmas lights around. Stores tend to jam racks up little more in that season in the hopes that people will buy a lot of things. And she says, you know, that she's She's focusing on the clothes. She's not sitting there staring at the floor. Now, maybe some people walk there that way, but I think she gives you the idea that there's just all this stuff around, and it couldn't have been seen.
Well, the suggestion is there can never be an open, obvious condition in a retail store environment. We don't believe that's the case. There's the Pelea versus Builder Square case that I argued in Illinois Appellate Court, which was in a retail environment. The fact is the Christmas lights that was testified to Rizzo, that was on the perimeter of the store, nowhere near where plaintiff was, that she said, and I don't know how this could be interpreted any other way, that she was focused on where she was walking.
Right, she's looking at those pajamas. She's not looking down at the floor, right?
Respectfully, she did not say she was looking at the pajamas. She said the opposite. She was looking at where she was walking. And the specific reference is, I believe, on page 58 and 60 of the transcript, where she was asked directly, because obviously these are issues in cases of this type, she said, I was focused on where I was walking. I had an opportunity to see the floor. As a matter of fact, I saw the floor before I endeavored to walk over there. Now, if the suggestion is, can you draw inferences to establish that it was not an open and obvious condition for the points that Your Honor made? And I guess an argument could be made in that respect.
I was thinking. I thought Judge Zagel went over the line on this particular point, given that it's a summary judgment posture. Now, it wouldn't matter if the first point goes your way, but it is a concern.
I appreciate the concern, and I understand, and if I'm analyzing this, I believe it's the weaker of the two points for us. I don't believe you get there. However, I do believe Judge Zagel's reasoning was appropriate. I believe that it was an argument that we had the greater weight of the evidence on that argument, and in fact, there was no testimony whatsoever. Normally in a case of this type where they're claiming under Ward and its progeny that there was distraction or momentary forgetfulness, there would be some testimony from someone that the plaintiff was distracted in some way. The word distraction or the inference associated with that is not in the record whatsoever. As a matter of fact, the words that are in the record are that she was focused and looking straight ahead. Now, you can take the totality of the circumstances and create a different picture if you'd like, and certainly say, I think it's a tough, open, and obvious case. That I will not dispute. But I will tell you that I think the record's pretty clear that this is an appropriate case for the open and obvious exception, that there is no duty associated with this pink milkshake spill, and that plaintiff was not distracted in any way and does not qualify for any of the exceptions. But be that as it may, I think the court has pointed out certainly that there's a fatal flaw to this case, and that fatal flaw is there's just no evidence whatsoever of constructive notice, that it's incumbent upon the plaintiff to establish constructive notice in some way. In the absence of actual notice, the law goes beyond that and says, okay, well, even if they don't have actual notice, we'll give you constructive notice because we want them to undertake the duty seriously to present a safe store for their customers, which Kohl's does, and the record's very clear on that issue. And I think it's important for the court to recognize a good corporate citizen and good corporate behavior, because I think this is the case for that. Kohl's did everything that it should have and went beyond what I think is required by law. And what the plaintiff is suggesting is they need to be clairvoyant or omniscient of a spill that her male companion said, looked at the same spill, not the pictures, at the actual spill, and said, I conclude, in my opinion, that just happened. The cup was there. The lid was there. The straw was there. It was still unmelted in areas. And Judge Williams brings up the appropriate issue is that where was it purchased? When was it purchased? Did the person who purchased it say, I want it thin, or I want it liquidy? Or did he or she have hot hands? Or did they have it in the cup for hours? Or did they say, hey, this thing's melted, let me drop it, I don't want it anymore? Okay? Who knows? But you can conjure up any number of scenarios.
Okay.
Well, the hot hands theory is a little far-fetched to me, unless our hands were on fire.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. I think you have a minute, Ms. Meadows.
I'd like to talk about the Peterson case. We didn't really, or from the opinion, there's really no evidence about how long that spell had been there either, other than the fact that Walmart employees had gone down the aisle about 10 minutes before the fall and said they didn't see anything, and then the plaintiff's husband in that case said he had been standing there for 10 minutes and that he hadn't heard any sounds of breakage. We don't even have anybody in Peterson saying, well, this looked like, you know, it was trampled through, it looked like it had been there for a long time. So in this case, we have even more evidence, Ms. Reed has more evidence of how long the spill had been there than was the case in Peterson. And as far as Ms. Reed's comments about being focused on where she was going, if you read her testimony, she wasn't asked, you know, well, where were you focused? She was just sort of asked, well, where were you looking as you were walking? She said, well, I was focused, but as Your Honor noted, she had already stated that a rack of pajama pants had caught her eye. So I would ask that the grant of summary judgment be reversed and the matter be remanded. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case.